This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Before his capture, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed boasted about his part in infamous crimes. He claimed that he proposed the ideas for the attacks on 9/11 to Osama bin Laden and that he personally beheaded American journalist Daniel Pearl. After years as a prisoner, he and four alleged accomplices will be formally arraigned on Thursday at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. It'll be the first time the public will get a look at Mohammed since we saw pictures of a sleepy, disheveled man wearing an oversized white T-shirt following his capture in Pakistan more than 5 years ago. For some, the proceedings represent a long-delayed opportunity to bring some of the men who organized 9/11 to justice. Others see them as a trial of American justice itself. Defense attorneys argue their clients were tortured, that they've been denied the opportunity to mount a meaningful defense, and that the military tribunals are stacked against them. NPR's Jackie Northam heads to Guantanamo later this week to cover the proceedings and joins us shortly. We'll also be joined by a general at Guantanamo Bay who will defend the way the prisoners there are treated. We want to hear from lawyers today. If you have questions about the military commissions at Guantanamo Bay, our number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, the cultural imperialism of boomers is on the opinion page this week, and we remember Bo Diddley, who died earlier today. But first, military tribunals. We'll hear arguments from both sides in a few minutes. We begin, though, with Jackie Northam, and she joins us here in Studio 3A. Jackie, always good to have you on the program.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you.
And who are the defendants besides Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and what are the charges?
The other one after Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is Ramzi bin al-Shib, and then there's Walid bin Attash, Ali Aziz Ali, and Mustafa al-Hassawi. All of the men are charged, along with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, are charged with terrorism. They're charged with murder. In fact, 2,973 counts of murder, and that's one for each person who died in the 9/11 attacks. Most of the men are also charged with hijacking as well. And they face a death penalty if they are prosecuted.
Wasn't there a sixth defendant?
There was. It was a man named Qahtani, and they did not press charges or level charges against him. It was decided at the last not to do it. Never explained why, except, you know, when you've been following this a long time, you know, there were very serious charges that he had been tortured and that type of thing, and that he wasn't mentally capable of facing a trial at this point. And so those charges, he was not charged in the end. And always, you're right, they thought that he would be, but he wasn't.
He was the so-called 20th hijacker.
That's right, yes.
Have the men been tortured? We heard that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the CIA, admits that he was waterboarded. They say that wasn't torture, but it is in a lot of people's eyes.
Right. Yes. These men were held for several years in, these secret CIA black prisons that are, you know, all spread all over the world. And when it was announced that they were going to Guantanamo Bay, they were being sent there in September 2006. In fact, it was the president that said it. And he basically admitted that the coercive techniques, interrogation techniques, had been used at these sites. So, it wasn't pointed out individually what had happened to each man, but the fact that, again, these coercive techniques are used at these sites and that these men were in these sites, if you put two and two together, I mean, you're probably going to... And that's really going to be a big part of these trials that's coming up here, Neil, is, you know, whether this evidence can be introduced if it was gained through coercive techniques, ... torture.
Mm-hmm. And that's been a controversy. Some of the prosecutors, in fact, have resigned over this.
Well, right. In fact, the chief prosecutor, Colonel Morris Davis, resigned over it. And oddly enough, he appeared at a trial for one of the detainees. Now, he was a man, and he still does. He believes in the system. What he did not believe in, what was happening when one of our guests that's going to be coming up here in a few minutes, Brigadier General Tom Hartman, thank you. Colonel Davis, when he was testifying at Hamdan's trial, said, "Look, before we didn't want to use any evidence that that we knew had been gained through one of these coercive techniques during interrogation." And he said that General Hartman, you need a flow chart for this, don't you? That General Hartman had decided, no, in fact, that evidence could be used. So you're right. I mean, it's even within the prosecution itself, there's a huge debate whether this stuff should be admitted. I talked with General Hartman the other day, and he said, really, it's the rules of evidence for these military commissions that coercive, any evidence that has been gained through coercion can be admitted.
Can be admitted,
but there's a difference between that and torture in their minds.
Will there be secret evidence presented?
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. In fact, that's going to be a real problem for us journalists. You know, at this moment, I talked with a lawyer for Ramzi bin al-Shib, and he says anything that comes out of his client's mouth is considered classified, top secret. So how this is going to be presented into the court, beyond the court, you know, for anybody trying to listen in, like the journalists, it's going to be a real challenge. We'll see how that unfolds.
Are we going to be able to see these proceedings? Are they going to be on TV?
There'll be closed circuit TV, so journalists down there will be allowed to. Having said that, they were doing these trial runs for the trials, and the power kept going out. You know, the whole system failed. But hopefully, and you know, Neil, you're talking about the last time anybody has seen any of these people. It's just been these grainy photographs of, you know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed moments after he is awoken and that type of thing. It really is going to be historic. I mean, because these are the big fish. Everybody up until now that they've tried, the dozen or so, you know, there's like a driver for bin Laden maybe, or somebody who, you know, trained at a camp in Afghanistan and that. But these guys were key. These guys helped plan and organize the 9/11 attacks. These guys are important. And there's a real question is, why them? Why are they doing it now, just months before the election, just weeks before a Supreme Court decision about habeas, that type of thing? Let's come into it.
A lot of questions about that. And yeah. Why has it taken so long
to get these fellows on board? Well, actually, these guys have been fast-tracked. They've only shown up at Guantanamo about a year and a half ago. Let's not forget, others have sat there for, 6 years and still haven't been charged, hundreds of people. So, you know, they had to get them out of the CIA sites. But really, that's one of the questions. Why are these guys moving along so fast rather than why is it taking so long?
And one question before we get to General Hartman, and that is an arraignment. What part of the proceeding is that?
It's the very first part of the proceeding. Really what it is the charges will be read out. They'll be asked if they are happy with their representation, that type of thing. And what's interesting about this is the detainees at Guantanamo who do go to trial, the very few, they have to go to their arraignment. They have to go to their arraignment. Last week, there was a detainee that came through, and he was literally dragged into courtroom, kicking and screaming. He did not want to. Now, Ramzi bin al-Shib, he has not appeared for any of his other little hearings that they have to determine whether they're enemy combatants.
Hearings.
You're right, exactly. It'll be interesting to see what happens with these guys.
Well, joining us now by phone from Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, is U.S. Air Force Brigadier General Thomas Hartman, legal advisor to the convening authority at the Department of Defense, Office of Military Commissions. And General Hartman, it's very good of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon. Tell us, I know that you've been involved in this. A lot of people, with respect, believe that these proceedings can't possibly be fair. Why do you feel the opposite?
These proceedings will be extraordinarily fair. They are literally unprecedented in the history of warfare. The types of protections we are making available to these accused in so many ways mirror the very rights we provide to our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, Coast Guard. It's just tremendous. If you compare these rights and protections that we provide to these people, they outdistance the international criminal tribunals. They far outdistance what we had in Nuremberg, and as I said, they virtually mirror what we have in the military justice system. It's quite extraordinary. There are some differences, of course, because of the nature of the global war on terror, but the rights and protections we provide in terms of attorney rights, support, right to remain silent in the courtroom, right to see every piece of evidence that goes to the finder of fact, right to call witnesses, right to confront witnesses, right to make motions, right to challenge judges and the jury, those are the same basic rights you would find in the United States. Those are the same basic rights you'd find in any Article III court, in any military court, and you're finding those in the military commissions. So it's tremendous. It's a tremendous reflection on the American people. It's a tremendous reflection on the American justice system.
People on the other side, as you know, the defense attorneys say they've been denied access to their clients, that their motions for discovery have been denied, that they feel that they don't have the very basis of presenting a meaningful defense.
Well, the access to their clients is run by Joint Task Force Guantanamo, which controls the detention facilities here. But the information I've received is that they have been given access to their clients on a fairly consistent basis. There have been, I believe, something like 200 visits last year by Commissions Counsel during the entire year, and this year it has doubled. And there are also counsel for habeas protection and things like that. So it, just as you would have in any normal detention facility, there are controls that are designed for the safety of the detention population and for the prison guards and so forth. So that's a fairly regulated procedure in order to ensure the safe and humane treatment of the accused in these cases, and that's paramount with regard to their treatment. So in terms of giving access to the defense counsel, that goes through an established procedure that the defense counsel know So there's been no denial as far as I'm concerned and as far as I know. And in terms of discovery, the discovery rights, Neil, are guided, as they are in any trial, by the rules that apply to that court system. These are very similar to military discovery rules, military court-martial discovery rules, and the defense makes a request. If they are unhappy with the results of that discovery, they go to the judge, which is a trial system that makes sure, that makes absolutely sure that the system is fair, because you have a seasoned military judge. All these judges have a great deal of experience to make sure that fairness applies.
And another question that many people will have is presenting evidence of confessions that were extracted under what the defense attorneys, indeed the defendants, will say was torture.
Mm-hmm. And the President of the United States has confirmed and reconfirmed that the United States does not engage in torture. Any statements obtained by torture are simply inadmissible in these tribunals. It's clear as can be. It's spelled out in black and white. To the extent that there is an issue with regard to the method by which evidence was obtained, and that's a matter of evidence admissibility, Neil, the court will decide that. The defense will make their arguments. The prosecution will make their arguments in open court. They will argue before the judge on the facts, the law, the evidence, and the judge will decide whether that evidence fits within the rules that are prescribed by this proceeding, and he will either admit it or exclude it.
And
that's what we call a trial, and that's the fairness of this system. Because a trial in America, a trial in any place, is a clash of ideas, a clash of fact, a clash of law, a clash of view, and we allow that clash to occur with every ounce of both sides' energy and enthusiasm and intensity. And out of that comes what we think is the best result.
General Hartman, stay on the line, if you would. We have to take a short break. We'll hear more from him in just a moment on the prosecution's case. Plus, in a few minutes, we'll be hearing from the other side. And Jackie Northam is still with us here in the studio. If you'd like to join the conversation about the upcoming trials of five men accused of the crimes of 9/11, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On Thursday, five men charged with organizing the attacks of 9/11 will be formally arraigned at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. They include Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged mastermind. Some see it as an opportunity for justice. Defense attorneys argue there will be no opportunity for justice in the military tribunal system. Our guests are NPR National Security Correspondent Jackie Northam. Also with us, Brigadier General Thomas Hartman. In a moment, we'll hear from the other side. If you have questions about the military commissions at Guantanamo Bay, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is Evan, and Evan's with us from Pinedale in Wyoming.
Hi there. Thank you for taking the call.
Yes, go ahead.
I guess really my point is, and I'm an attorney, that I think we're putting a lot of the apples before the cart. The basic fundamental structure of a legal system is the credibility that it has with the people. And we have to remember that this tribunal involves international suspects, and it involves all the citizens of those countries. And right now, I think all these very technical arguments about procedural rules are really lost on all of these folks. What they're looking at is really the history of the conduct of this administration in the pursuit of this war. And so I really have to, and I can't speak for these people because I'm an American, but my impression is that this result may not sit too well, or at least how it's going about with a lot of folks in these countries. And that's a very... That's basically the fundamental guarantee of law, is that this is a credible process.
Yeah, not merely justice, but that it be perceived as justice. General Hartman?
Well, I fully agree with you, Evan. The fundamental guarantee of this process is that it is not simply a theoretical guarantee of justice, but it's a real guarantee of justice and fairness. And perhaps some of the cases have fallen below the radar screen, but the Hamdan case is another case that is ongoing. The 9/11 case will go into the arraignments later this week, but the Hamdan case, for example, is a case that has been going on for some time. And if you walked into the courtroom during the Hamdan case, you would see five counsel at Mr. Hamdan's table, detailed military counsel, a Department of Defense civilian, and three civilian lawyers, two from a distinguished law firm on the West Coast, and Mr. Swift, who will be with you on the rest of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you see in the courtroom, and you see the accused being able to speak to the judge, and you see the accused being able to exercise his rights, and you see the accused being able to call witnesses. And
5 years later.
And debate.
5 years later, sir. That,
well,
and really, the other part of the puzzle, too, is
you have
this country.
I certainly wouldn't argue that the process should have moved faster. I'm a big proponent for moving the process as rapidly as it possibly can, under the fundamental precept, of course, that you have to be fair, just,
arrested him. That factors very largely. And really, this tribunal process seems to ignore those realities. I'd also add that
one last point,
you know,
Evan,
internationally speaking, if the Supreme Court is shooting down a lot of the so-called procedures that we've been hearing for the last 5 years, that also weighs very heavily. And these are, you know, and this is a basic point about lawyers. We're not very popular in this country, and I suspect we might be less popular in the rest of the world. So I'm not really sure that, you know, piling up a bunch of attorneys really means anything to these folks in the rest of the world.
All right, Evan, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
General Hartman, what happens after the arraignment? How long are these trials expected to last?
Evan, Neil, you can never predict how long a trial is going to last. The arraignments occur within 30 days of the service of the charges on various people. Mr. Hamdan, for example, was his charges were referred in May of 2007, and now his trial is set for July of 2008. So they take time. They're very complicated. The 9/11 involves five accused who are jointly to be tried in capital cases, so I expect it to be complex. The stakes are high. The parties are very much engaged. There are a total of, 18 counsel on the case, two military counsel per accused, and eight other civilian counsel, and there are five military counsel on five prosecution counsel. So it's going to be what a trial should be, a very intense, focused, driven process to achieve the truth, to achieve fairness, to achieve justice, and we'll do that as transparently as humanly possible.
If I could just interject a little bit. Neil,
this is Jackie Northam, General. Go ahead, Jackie.
General, hi. I think the caller has made a valid point, because anywhere in the world, Guantanamo is really seen as a sort of this injustice, American injustice, rather than justice in that. And actually, General Hartman and I discussed this the other day, is that it doesn't matter. Even if this thing was the epitome of pure justice, the perception now is so tainted that how will this be viewed throughout the world? The other thing, though, when you were talking about how long a trial will take, what is coming up is a Supreme Court decision on whether these men down in Guantanamo are entitled to challenge their detention in U.S. courts. If they come down...
In federal courts.
In federal courts, U.S. courts. Yes, federal courts. And it depends what that decision is, because we could see things change dramatically if, in fact, you know, it comes down in favor of being able to do that.
We have this email question from Parker. What would happen to any defendants found not guilty? Does it mean that they would be released?
There are two systems in Guantanamo Bay. One is the detention system. There are about 270 people here at Guantanamo who are being detained because they are enemy combatants who pose a danger to our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines on the battlefield. It's not exactly like a POW status, but it's that concept that you remove those people from the battlefield to prevent them from harming our soldiers. The second subset of that is these commission trials that my expectation is, what I've been advised, is that they will try about 80 of these accused. And within that subset, so that's 80 of the 270. If there's an acquittal in any of the cases, the accused remains a detainee under the system down here. So to the extent that others determine that he remains a danger to our soldiers on the battlefield, he could still be detained, but that's separate from the commission process.
And that could be indefinitely.
Well, it depends upon the nature of the hostilities. You would detain someone presumably during the duration of the hostilities, and that's something that our national leaders have to determine as to whether we are continuing in the global war on terror at any given point.
General Hartman, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
That's Brigadier General Thomas Hartman, the legal advisor to the convening authority at the Department of Defense, and he joined us by phone from Guantanamo Bay. Joining us now from the studios of Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta is Lieutenant Commander Charlie Swift, a retired naval officer, visiting associate professor at Emory University, also the attorney for Salad Ahmed Hamdan, the man currently in custody at Guantanamo Bay. You heard General Hartman refer to him earlier. Lieutenant Commander, nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be with you, Neil.
And let me ask you about some of the proceedings. You don't represent any of the five men being arraigned on Thursday, but your case is a little bit more advanced. Have you had access to your client? Have you had discovery motions respected? Have you been able to mount a meaningful defense?
I think in Hamdan's case, we have had access to our client fairly consistently. I understand that that same level of access has not been provided to the attorneys in the high-value detainee cases. Whether that changes after the proceedings get going or not, we'll have to see. We have filed for discovery. We haven't received all of it. And what was really curious to me about what General Hartman said regarding coerced statements was that the government has not permitted us access to the high-value detainees. That was something we particularly wanted to go because, as is pointed out, KSM is considering a founding member of Al-Qaeda. And
that's Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Someone who would know what Mr. Hamdan's role was in the process. And so we wanted to talk to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed about what Mr. Hamdan did in relationship to 9/11 or any other Al-Qaeda activities. The government absolutely opposed that. They said that even for us to talk to him about pre-9/11 conduct would pose a risk to the national security. Basically, exactly what Jackie said, that anything KSM says is so highly classified, you can't listen in on it. Now, that asks a real question as to whether this is going to be an open trial or not. It may be an open trial for when the government speaks, but when the defense speaks or Khalid Sheikh Mohammed speaks, they'll classify that information. And that goes back to Evan. If what happens down there, we're starting way behind. If what happens down there is a one-sided presentation of the evidence, where the detainees have no right to speak where the world can hear, they would be able to speak inside the hearing proceedings, but it's been set up so that anything they say can be immediately deleted so the press can't listen to it. And I understand Jackie's frustration, and I have the same frustration because, in my view, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed may well prove that my client's innocent. As that proceeding goes on, if that's how we're having a full, fair, and open process where we only hear one side, the world is not going to buy this. Moreover, the general indicated that, gee, these proceedings were exactly like U.S. proceedings. They were so similar, and they were highly above international proceedings. No international proceeding would ever admit a statement obtained by waterboarding. The courts have actually looked at waterboarding in the United States, and they found it to be an abhorrent practice, which fully and absolutely violates the fundamental rights of due process. So, again, when we sit here and say these things, the problem is they haven't proven to be true. And the promises so far haven't lived up to it. Now, in the Hamdan, maybe the Hamdan case is also a great example. General Hartman likes to point to the number of lawyers who were there. One of the interesting things was that same trial disqualified his participation because they found that he had become a prosecutor, vice being a neutral authority, which is what his role is, to be a neutral authority to ensure that it's a fair process.
Hmm. Yeah, Jackie.
And they disqualified him from that. And so... Yes, go ahead.
I'm just saying Jackie referred to that decision earlier, and I just wanted to give a chance to get a listener in on the conversation. And let's see if we can go now to Michael, and Michael's calling us from Salt Lake City in Utah.
Hi, Neil.
Hi, Michael.
Are you there?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Well, I don't know how relevant my comment is to what's being said right now, but my concern is that as a public, and even I believe the media, we have attempted to apply the rights of United States citizens to these detainees, and they are in fact not entitled to those rights. They are not United States citizens. They are fall under a different category.
How about that, Charlie Swift?
Well, there are two parts to it. is, one, the Constitution, and I agree in part, the Constitution provides protections both in to individual U.S. citizens, and a long line of Supreme Court cases makes clear that foreign nationals, under certain circumstances, do not have the full panoply of the Bill of Rights. On the other hand, we are a limited government and a government of law. That means that our government is still constrained both by international law and by the Articles of the Constitution. And what's been proposed here is a system that not only does not accord all of the constitutional Bill of Rights protections, but also ignores the constraints of the rule of law on the United States. The reason that this has been called lawless is that the United States recognizes no law but the law currently that they pass after the fact. And that is particularly troublesome. It's troublesome from the idea of a limited government under the rule of law, and it's troublesome to the international community, where we claim a two-tier system wherein U.S. citizens have special protections and the rest of the world doesn't. And that is probably the single greatest complaint about the rest of the world, from the rest of the world, is that the United States is claiming a two-tiered system and claiming that it's not at all restrained by international law.
Thanks very much for the call, Michael.
Thank you.
We're talking about the trials at Guantanamo Bay, military tribunals they're often called, or military commissions. Our guest is Charlie Swift, a retired lieutenant commander, and he's an associate professor at Emory University and an attorney for Salih Ahmed Hamdan. His case is further along than the case that goes to arraignment on Friday. Jackie Northam is also with us here in the studio. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Charlie, I just want to... Hi, Charlie. It's Jackie Northam speaking.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I just wanted to... ask you, you know, this decision that's going to come up for your client, Hamdan, by the Supreme Court within a month or something like that. What will happen if they decide that they can, that the detainees can challenge their detention in U.S. federal courts?
In Mr. Hamdan's case, it may reinvigorate, it will reinvigorate his habeas petition challenging the military commissions. Most importantly is, and the judge has admitted in Mr. Hamdan's case, he said on the record that he struggles nightly with the question of ex post facto law. The government's position has been that they're not limited by the constitutional prohibition against ex post facto. If, in fact, the habeas provision prevails, it stands to all reason that the ex post facto limitation also prevails. It's in the same article. It would be difficult to see how one would have the right to habeas corpus, but the government would have the power of that would not be constrained by an ex post facto problem. That will be the death knell for many of the charges against Mr. Hamdan, because the government has basically admitted that they wrote these after the fact. And the MCA is a clear reaction to the Hamdan decision. And that's, of course, Congress's power to do that. But to go back in time and rewrite the rules and the change for Mr. Hamdan is problematic. Now,
just to get a referral, MCA, which you're referring to, is the Military Commissions
Military
Act.
Military Commissions Act,
which was
I'm
passed
sorry.
By Congress after the original procedures were overthrown by the Supreme Court.
That's right.
So many permutations this whole commissions thing, hasn't it, Charlie?
That's
in some ways, I hate to sound flippant, but sometimes it reminds me of playing cards with my niece. If she's losing, we are changing the rules. It's as simple as that, you know? And
that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's absolutely the problem. The losing and then changing the rules is what the government has probably alienated the rest of the world even more on, is that the rules seem to be set up so the detainee loses no matter what. And again, General Hartman referred to, well, the two-tiered system, et cetera. The short answer to that question, the very relevant email question, what happens if you win? In Mr. Hamdan's case, he goes back to the same cell. And there is no winning or losing inside the commission system for Mr. Hamdan. The only thing that a conviction can possibly obtain is political justification for the government. It doesn't change where he's staying or how he's staying. And so we have the trials being fundamentally undermined by our positions. It's just a mistake.
Thanks very much for being with us. That was Charlie Swift, who's an attorney for Salih Ahmed Hamdan, a man currently in custody at Guantanamo Bay, who's currently experiencing one of the military tribunals underway. As we mentioned this Thursday, five men accused of organizing the 9/11 attacks will be arraigned. And we spoke earlier with Brigadier General Thomas Hartman, the legal advisor to the convening authority for the Department of Defense. NPR's Jackie Northam heads to Guantanamo, Wednesday?
Wednesday, yes.
Wednesday. Have a great trip,
yeah,
and we'll be hearing
your
reports from Guantanamo Bay. We just learned she gets to sleep in a tent while
on
our time.
On a cot.
On a cot. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up, Megan Dom has had enough of boomer nostalgia, plus remembering Bo Diddley, who died earlier today. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.